Good morning, and once again, welcome to all whom we have with us. For those of you visiting with us today, we are especially honored by your presence, and we thank you for coming, and we invite you to come back at every opportunity that you have to do so. We will be assembling again this evening at 6 o'clock for another worship service on this Lord's Day, and each Wednesday night at 7:30, as well as Sunday morning at 9:45, we have Bible classes for all ages, and two different adult classes that are engaged at the same time so that you can choose one topic or the other as we open the Bible, our Bibles, and strive to study the Word of God. If you have questions about something that you observe in the way that we worship God, or if you have questions about something that you hear in this lesson, I would be more than happy to talk with you following the services this morning. And if we cannot give you a quick answer, perhaps arrangements can be made for a more detailed study in the near future. We fully realize that when we assemble together, our purpose for being here is to worship God. And we realize that in order to do that, we need to follow His instructions. We need to follow the pattern that He has established for us, seeking to please Him rather than to please ourselves. To worship the Creator rather than worshiping the creature. That needs to be our attitude. Throughout this year, we have been dealing with the basics. Back to the basics. And for those who have been coming here on a regular basis, we understand that typically what we have been doing each month is we have been looking at a different fundamental subject that we need to be grounded in, and it's foundational when we look at serving God the way that He would have us to be. In the month of January, we dealt with the subject of who is God. In February, we talked about the Bible. In March, we dealt with the Godhead. And then after that, we dealt with the subject of authority, how to establish authority. We've talked about what is the church and what is the work of the church. And we've dealt with a number of other subjects, including unity and division. Next month, and actually I'm starting today, we are going to be dealing with the subject of worship. And so over the course of the next 4 weeks, and I may actually add a fifth lesson when I return, we are going to talk about some things dealing with the subject of worship as we find true worship in the Bible. Just to let you know, the fourth Sunday next month, Terry and I will not be here. We are going to be in Kentucky with our family at that time. And that's one reason I'm starting this a week early. And of course, this month we did not deal with this particular theme. So I'm going to go ahead and start that today, and we will address this the next 4 weeks. Of course, this is the fundamental thing to understand as we study worship. The first thing we need to understand is what worship actually is about. Now, the subject of worship is a challenge, and it's actually a controversial subject that so many people have changed its meaning. And we find that worship takes place in so many different ways today in the religious world. When it comes to worship, some see it as an emotional occasion, and they want to emphasize the experience that you have when you worship God. And some of the things that people do to work one up into an experience are interesting. Others see worship as a ritualistic, liturgical type of an occasion. And while there is certainly a degree of which we need to follow God's prescribed pattern in what we do, we also find that our worship needs to be with the understanding. Some religions, in carrying out their worship services, they carry out rituals. Catholicism in times past, and they may even do this to a certain degree today, they conducted their mass, which was their worship service, in Latin. And many of the worshipers had no idea what was actually being said. So it was merely going through a ritualistic form. Is that what the Bible describes as what worship is supposed to be about? Well, in our lesson today, we're going to talk about what true worship is and some of the qualities that are associated with worship. Next week, we are going to deal with the subject of the seriousness of worship, and we're going to talk a little bit about reverence toward God in our worship. The following week, we're going to talk about the five acts of worship that we find in the New Testament that we engage in when we assemble together and the authority for those things. And then the week after that, we are going to deal with some abuses concerning worship today. Talk about some things such as casualness that's often associated with worship. Mistaking the difference or making a or tying together service with worship. Those types of things, as well as some other abuses that are associated with worship. So that's what we're going to deal with in this particular block of lessons. And I'll tell you right now, it's very, very important that we get what worship is about. And we could literally devote an entire year to talking about worship as it is used in the Bible. We find your worship in Genesis chapter 4. And very probably even before that with Adam and Eve. But with Cain and Abel, you find the first act of worship. You also find the first false act of worship in Genesis chapter 4. And all throughout the Old Testament, you find examples of acceptable and unacceptable worship to God. In the New Testament, you find examples of acceptable and unacceptable worship to God. You find instructions on how to worship God. When you go to the book of Revelation and you look at heaven and what heaven is going to be like, you find the throne of God, and those who are around the throne of God are worshiping God. In Revelations chapters 4 and 5. So from beginning to end, the Bible deals with the subject of worship. So it is important that we understand what worship is. Now, in our English Bibles, the word worship is actually based upon a number of different Greek words. And I'm going to talk about four of those words for the next few minutes, because I believe one of the ways to properly understand a subject as God wants it to be is to look at it based on the words that are in the Bible, that were in the original language as God spoke these things. So we're going to talk about four words this morning, and then we're going to talk about what worship actually involves, what it is. The first word that we want to talk about is the most prevalent of the words that is translated worship in the New Testament, and that is the Greek word. It's proskuneo, or one of the derivatives of that particular form. And it is a word that means to kiss toward. Literally, the idea of it is to kiss the hand of. And that's what you're talking about when you deal with worshiping. It's bowing down. I was listening to a lesson dealing with the subject of worship, and it talks about to approach one with downcast eyes. The idea of that is realizing who you are in the presence of and rendering proper homage or proper respect and reverence to the one to whom you are worshiping. Vines, in defining this word, says it means to make obeisance or to do reverence toward. To approach one with reverence is the idea of that. Another Greek dictionary describes it as to express an attitude or gesture one's complete dependence on or submission to a high authority figure. You know, we sometimes see pictures of bowing down before a king, bowing down before someone who is a dignitary or an authority. And I don't necessarily think that is wrong. I don't think you need to worship that person. And we're going to see that one thing about worshiping God is why we demonstrate that attitude. And the idea of that is showing reverence and deference and respect to that person. And you may not even respect the person because of what they stand for. But the office that they represent is worthy of respect and worthy of reverence. And you would see this word proskuneo as one would bow before a king. Worshiping, as we're going to see, though, is something that you actually enter into. So it's more than just the idea of bowing before, but it has that reverent mindset. And that's the point that I want us to understand when we deal with this subject. When we talk about worshiping God, the idea is you understand that you are in the presence of God, and therefore you will render to Him the honor, the sacred respect, the reverence that He deserves. That's worship. When we think about what we need to be doing. This word is used about 50 or 60 times in the New Testament. A few of the passages that we might give consideration to. In John chapter 4 and verse number 24, and this is actually a text that we are going to refer to toward the end of our lesson this morning as well. But in this particular verse here, we find that Jesus is speaking to a Samaritan woman, and He is discussing the subject of worship. And He says there in verse 23, He says, "The hour is coming and now is when the true worshiper will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and truth." And that word worship there is this Greek word, proskuneo. Humbly bow before, to approach with downcast eyes, in spirit and in truth. In Matthew chapter 4, verses 9 and 10, you have here Matthew's account of the temptation of Jesus. And among the three temptations we have recorded is the devil, Satan, takes Jesus up on a high mountain. And in a moment it says that he showed him all the kingdoms of the world. And Satan says to him in verse 9, "All these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." And that word worship there is this same word. If you will bow down before me and if you will show me due reverence. That's what the devil is saying to Jesus. And here's the answer of Jesus. "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and Him only you shall serve." And again, you have that word worship. And it's this Greek word here. You shall worship the Lord your God. He's the only one before you render that type of an attitude. We read in scriptures of numerous examples of this word used in worship. And we're not going to read all these. Hebrews 1 and verse number 6, you find the angels worship the Lord. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse number 21, that where you find numerous examples of faith, it talks about how Jacob gave instructions concerning his bones, and it says that he worshipped leaning on his staff. He worshipped before God as he was about to die, rendering to God the reverence that he was due, realizing how God had blessed him all throughout his life. In Revelation chapter 4 and verse 10, in Revelation chapter 5 and verse number 14, you have a picture of the throne of God in heaven. And it is described as a place where all sorts of creatures are worshiping before God. In Revelation 4 and verse 10, you read there about 24 elders bowing down before the Lord, and they are worshiping God. In Revelation chapter 5 and verse 14, they're worshiping the Lord. You have four living creatures doing the same thing, declaring who God is and bowing down, prostrating before God in worship to Him. We need to keep that word in mind when we ask ourselves, am I worshiping God? But another Greek word that is occasionally used, and this is only used about 10 times or so in the New Testament, is the word sebo. And it's a word that means to express in gestures, rites, or ceremonies one's allegiance to another. So what this carries with it is the idea of you show your allegiance to somebody by what you do. We might describe that with another word. You obey. How do you show allegiance to somebody? You do what they tell you to do. You do what they tell you to do the way that they tell you to do it. So we see in this term here the idea of worshiping God the way that He wants. In Matthew chapter 15 and in verse number 9, we find this text used describing wrong worship. And of course, this is in a context where Jesus is approached by the religious leaders, the scribes and the Pharisees, asking why he and his disciples did not keep the traditions of the fathers, which they had bound upon the nation, things which God had not bound. They had made it a part of worship, and God never did. And of course, Jesus rebukes them, pointing out and exposing how they had corrupted the law, twisted the law to say what they wanted it to say, changing it when it was convenient for them to change that, to change it. And then in verses 8 and 9, he says there, "Hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, 'These people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. And in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men.'" In vain they show gestures and rites and ceremonies before me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. Now I want you to understand that Jesus is not saying there that we ought not to show gestures and follow God's instructions in how we worship Him. He's saying what they were doing was vain because they weren't obeying God. They were not following God's instructions the way that they ought to. In Romans chapter 1 and verse 25 there, it talks about how they worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator. And again, I mean, it talks about man creating gods in their own images and creating all kinds of four-footed creatures and beasts. And they would worship idols. That's really the description that he has given there. They worshipped and served the creature rather than expressing proper homage toward the God of heaven by doing the things that He tells them to do. God gave the Israelites very specific instructions as to how to worship Him. Extreme details. What the tabernacle was to look like, how it was to be constructed, what the dimensions were, what the robes that the priests were supposed to wear, how the various sacrifices were to be offered, when and where the feasts that they observed were to be observed, and how they were to observe those feasts. God was very, very specific to them. And in the New Testament, He's very, very specific as to how He wants us to worship Him. And we need to follow His instructions in the things that we do. Now, we find today that those instructions involve the heart. But I want you to notice in that text, while it talks about they were worshiping the creature, he says they worship the creature instead of the Creator. The implication is there is what? They ought to be doing this to the Creator. Acts chapter 16 and in verse number 14, you find there Lydia worshiping God. Acts chapter 18 and verse number 7, you find Justice, the ruler of a synagogue, worshiping God. And the word worship that is used there is this word, sabah. A third word that we want to talk about, and this is actually an interesting word when we deal with the subject of worship, is the word Eusebia. The word Eusebia is a word that actually means to demonstrate awesome respect toward one, specifically toward God. It's to show piety, and it is to demonstrate godliness. And what is interesting about this verse is it's only used one time as worship. And that's found in Acts chapter 17 and in verse number 23. And it's actually not talking about worshiping God on this particular occasion. It's talking about Athens, and Paul's in Athens. And he said, "I noticed that you worship your gods, your idols." And he says, "I even noticed that there's an idol to the unknown God." And he said, "I want to talk about him for a few minutes. I'll talk about the unknown God. He's the one you ought to be rendering respect and piety toward. He's the one toward whom you ought to be demonstrating godliness." And the majority of times that this word Eusebia is used, it is the word godliness. The word godliness. And as I said, it's not always dealing particularly with the subject of worship particularly. But you have, for example, in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and in verse number 2. And this is a text where we pray for our leaders. And what he says there is you give thanks and supplications for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. That word godliness there is this word eusebia. We want to be able to worship God, and we need to pray to God that we are able to show Him the piety and the respect that He deserves, and that we can live our lives imitating Him. Which, if you want a simple definition of what godliness is, that's what it is. You imitate God. You strive to be God-like. Not that you are the nature of God, but you strive to emulate His character in your life. His characters. His love. His long-suffering. His patience. His graciousness. His mercy. All of those things need to be prevalent in our lives. You find that godliness. 2 Peter chapter 1. We have all things that pertain to life and godliness. Verses 6 and 7. You're adding to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge patience, to self-control, to self-control patience, to patience godliness, eusebia. To your godliness you add brotherly kindness. To your brotherly kindness you add love. And I will tell you right now that the reason this applies where worship is concerned is it describes what we are when we approach God. We need to be living godly lives as we approach God. You know, you hear about those who they worship God on Sunday and then Monday through Saturday they live the opposite of what it means to serve God. So they kind of figure, you know what, as long as I give God one day a week, that's all I need. We know better than that, don't we? Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, and we'll talk more about this next week. Paul says, I beseech you to present your bodies a living sacrifice. We are the sacrifice. That we present that to God. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That's the attitude that we as Christians need, and we need that attitude all the time. We need eusebia in our lives. We need to purify ourselves as we approach God in worship. That's how we render ourselves worthy. That's how we render service to God that is a pleasing and acceptable sacrifice to Him. The fourth word that we want to talk about is the word latreo. And this is actually a word that means to serve. And the idea is there of you render service to one. And this is a word that throughout the New Testament is used a number of times. Sometimes it's directed toward God. Other times it's just talking about servants and rendering service to one another. That's the attitude that we need to have. And I'm going to tell you right now, we need that in our worship to God. Our worship to God involves serving God. Rendering service to God. In Philippians chapter 3 and in verse number 3. Philippians chapter 3 and in verse number 3. Paul there says, We are the circumcision who worship God in spirit, rejoice in Christ Jesus, and have no confidence in the flesh. Talking about as Jews, we worship God. And the idea there is we serve God. We do what God would have us to do. In Acts chapter 24 and in verse number 14, Paul there says, I confess to you that according to the way, which they call a sect, so I worship the God of my fathers, believing all things that are written in the law and the prophets. I worship God. I do what God says. And that's really what he is saying there. When we talk about rendering service to God, serving God in our worship, involving serving God, the idea is God tells you to do something and you do what He tells you to do. And that's very important that we grasp that when we think about worshiping God. Worshiping God's not about me. It's not about you. You'll benefit from it. You'll be edified by it. But worship's about God. And so we serve Him. We find good illustrations of this in Hebrews chapter 10, where the Hebrew writer there is talking about the priesthood. He's talking about the old priest. He said the law, in verse 1, the law having a shadow of good things to come and not the very image of the things can never, with these same sacrifices which they offer continually year by year, make those who approach perfect. For then they would have ceased to be offered. For the worshipers, once purified, would have had no more consciousness of sin. The worshipers, once purified. In that text, he's talking about the priests. And what he is saying there is they were worshipers of God. Now the word there is this latreo, and what it means is they served God. And when you look at what the priest did back then, you know, we think of the priesthood being glamorous. You realize what the average priest was doing? He was slaughtering animals day in and day out. And imagine during the feasts when every family was supposed to offer sacrifices to God. That was not what we would call a sanitary environment, you know, pure from that standpoint. It was filthy. It was hard work. It was labor. You had blood all over the place and you had smoke. You had fire, burning flesh. You know, I'm just trying to, you think about it that way. But why did they do it that way? Because God said so. And what made them what God would have them to be is they did what God said, the way that God said to do it, and with a proper attitude. And when we look at these words, we see the idea of what is associated with worship. In Hebrews chapter 12 and in verse number 28. Hebrews 12 and in verse number 28. You find that the Hebrew writer says, therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. The word serve there is this word latreo. And it's often translated as serve. There's one more verse that I want you to note, and we've already mentioned this verse. Matthew chapter 4 and verse number 10. Jesus, as He was tempted by the devil, we talked about the word proskuneo a few minutes ago, where He said, if you will worship Me, and Jesus said, "It is written, get away from Me, it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and Him only you shall serve." Serving in that text is associated with worship. Now I want to make a brief observation here that we're going to deal a little more with in another lesson. There are some today who are advocating that everything we do is worship. That's not true. Everything we do is serving God. And we need to serve God in all of our lives. But worship is one aspect of our service to God. And I want you to think about, like this, Matthew 4 and verse number 10. If latreo means worshiping God, and incidentally, what the reason that argument is being made is because you've got churches today and you've got people that are wanting to get away from formal worship. And they're wanting to turn worship into a casual, spontaneous occasion, where you just come as you are and you do whatever you want and we'll just have a good old time and in the midst of our picnic or our party, we'll just break out in worship to God. That's what they're talking about. And they say, all life is worship. Well, you know, I want you to think about that. If that's true, then could we translate Matthew 4:10? It is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and Him only shall you worship. And when you look at it the way that it is written there, it's repetitive. Jesus said, you serve God. And there's a lot of verses like that, incidentally, where if you substitute the word serve for worship,
In Romans, Paul says, through love, betrayal one another. Worship one another? I don't think that's what he's saying there, is it? So, anyways, there is a distinction. But let us not forget that when we worship God, we are serving God. And in our worship, we need to be doing what He tells us to do. And that's the point. So there's the four words that I want us to give consideration to as we spend the rest of our time talking about some qualities that are associated with what worship actually involves. And the first thing that I want us to notice in what worship is worship is sacred. Worship is a holy act. Worship is something that is to be treated as a solemn occasion that is due the greatest of reverence. I do not believe that the Bible teaches a dress code for worshiping God, other than to say, I don't think we ought to treat it as a casual occasion. And you know, when you've got these churches that are saying, come as you are, you know, there are some of these coastal communities, I don't think there's any more around here, but I remember down in Florida years and years ago, there were drive-in churches. You know, in Tampa, Florida, Daytona Beach, Florida. So you can go to God and worship in a drive-in environment. You can go in your bikini so that when you get done, you can go to the beach and have fun the rest of the day. Casual as it can be. Well, let me tell you the problem with dressing casually. It usually reflects a mindset. It's not about what you're wearing. You don't have to wear a suit to worship God. I want to tell you right now, when you worship God, it needs to be with a mindset that He deserves my best. This is a solemn, sacred occasion that we are coming together for. It's not a party. It's worshiping God.
That's why you go back to that Hebrews 12 and verse number 28. We serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. The Old Testament demonstrates that fact over and over again. I think about the consecration of the tabernacle in Exodus chapter 40, verses 34 through 38, where you find when the tabernacle was finally built, and the day that Moses consecrated the temple, he sprinkled it with blood. And a cloud came down from heaven and entered into the tabernacle, consecrating the tabernacle and declaring that's where the presence of God was. Wrap that amount around your mind when you worship. And again, we'll talk about that more next week. We talk about the seriousness of worship. Why were Nadab and Abihu in Leviticus chapter 10, verses 1 and 2, burned to death for offering profane fire? And if you read verse number 3 there, God says, by those who have come near to me, I must be hallowed. That's what he was saying there. I must be treated with reverence. You have the example of Cain and Abel, the very first recorded example of worshiping God. Cain's sacrifice was rejected by God. Why? Apparently, he didn't do something right. He didn't follow God's instructions in one way or another. Here and now, it's a sacred occasion. You need to keep that in mind. That Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11. It's talking about the Sabbath day, which God hallowed. That's what you have there in verse number 11. God sanctified that day. He set it apart for the Jews to worship. And he expected them to act a certain day, a certain way on that day, didn't he? It's very specific about it. I mean, the old law, you violate the Sabbath law, you're to be taken out and stoned to death. That's how serious it is. It's a sacred occasion. We need to keep that in mind. Another thing that we need to consider about our worship is it is a way to draw near to God. In Hebrews chapter 10 and in verse number 22, Hebrews chapter 10 and in verse number 22, we read there in that verse, it says, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance
of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. This comes on the heels of talking about Jesus entering into heaven as our high priest. He's the high priest entering for us, and so when we enter God, we need to do so with drawing near to God with a pure heart. We need to draw near to God. Worship is a way that we can draw near to God. Because we're doing what God tells us to do. And it's a time that we set aside to think about God. And to do what God would have us to do in memory of Him. In James chapter 4 and in verse number 8. James chapter 4 and in verse number 8. James there says, "Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you." How do you want God to draw near to you? You draw near to Him. Now, one way that you do that is by worshiping God. Worshiping God as He prescribes us when we assemble together, and worshiping God throughout the week. You know, you need to study your Bibles not just on Sundays. You need to study your Bibles daily. You need to pray to God every day. And that is worshiping God. God recognizes devout worship. And He recognizes those who are devoted to Him. You see there in verse 15 of Hebrews 13, "Therefore by Him let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, that is the fruit of our lips, the giving of thanks in His name. But do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased." You want God to be pleased with you? Draw near to God. And in our worship, we are drawing near to God. Philippians 4:8, which isn't talking specifically about worshiping God, it's talking about the brethren as they gave to help others. As they supported Paul in the preaching of the gospel, is what it's talking about. And it said, "With such sacrifices, God is well pleased." Or he talked about it being a pleasing sacrifice on that particular occasion. So we find that it involves, he called it a sweet aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. Worship is also a way to give back to God. We've taught this on numerous occasions, and we understand that you can never, ever outgive God. He has given us so many things. And we cannot begin to pay Him back. And as a matter of fact, as a child of God, one of the things that you understand about this life is everything that you have actually does belong to Him. And we are just simply stewards. We are servants entrusted with what He has given us. But one thing that we need to do with what we have is we need to express our gratitude to Him by giving Him back some of it. It all really belongs to Him. He's given it to us to use for Him. But worship is a way of giving back to God. And I want you to think about that. You know, you give up of your time. You give God time every week. You want to know the problem that somebody says, "Well, I'll worship God most of the time, but if I'm on vacation, it's okay if I skip." You know, that kind of an attitude? Doesn't God deserve consistently every week, week in and week out, you thinking about Him every on Sunday? Give Him an hour of worship, 2 hours of worship, 3, 4, is that really too much? It's really something for us to think about. But how many people worship God when it's convenient and that's the only time? God deserves more than that. If you're going to give back, if you realize what God's given you, you're going to give back to Him. In 1 Chronicles 29, verses 10 through 19, you have here that it's describing David toward the end of his life as he is receiving the offerings for the building of the temple, which he was not allowed to build because God said so.
But nevertheless, the people they gave in such abundance. And that caused David to say in verses 13 and 14 of 1 Chronicles 29, "Now therefore, O God, we thank you and praise your glorious name. But who am I? And who are my people that we would be able to offer so willingly as this? For all this comes from you, and of your own we have given back to you," or "we have given you." David's acknowledging it belongs to you anyways, and we're giving some of it back. And that's why it doesn't need to be leftovers. That's why when we lay by in store on the first day of the week, the idea is you lay by in store before the first day of the week so that on the first day of the week it is planned, it is purposed in your heart. It's just one example. You lay by in store in your time to give God time by assembling together with the saints, by worshiping God on a daily basis at home. You find in 1 Chronicles 21 and verse 24, this was another occasion when David had sinned against God. He had offered a census that was unauthorized, and as a result, David and Israel suffered the consequences of that. And David goes to offer a sacrifice to God to make amends because God has mercy on the people. And he goes to the threshing floor of Ornan and he says, I need to make a sacrifice here. And Ornan, who was a well-off man, said, "Take what you want. Here's the animals. Here's the land. Here's everything you need to offer the sacrifice. I'll give it to you." And David's response in 21 and verse 24 was, "No. I'll buy it from you. Why? I will not offer to God that which costs me nothing." What an attitude. That's the attitude that we need to have when it comes to worshiping God. We give back to God. You will never, ever be able to repay God for what He has given you. But you can give Him back something. Give Him back what you can. And that goes back to that Hebrews 13, 15 and 16. "With such sacrifices God is well pleased." Luke 17 and verse number 10. You know, when we have done all that we are commanded to do, say we are unprofitable. We have done what was our duty. Nothing more, nothing less. And finally, worship is a deliberate act. And I want you to hear me clearly. This is important that we understand this. This is not an accidental statement. It's on purpose. Worship is something that you enter into. You serve God all the time, but you enter into worship. Worship has a beginning point, and worship has an ending point. And your mind needs to grasp that when you enter into worship. Israel had feasts that had a beginning, and they had an end. And during that feast, there were certain things that they were instructed to do. They entered into that period of time of worshiping God the way that He said to do it. If you look at the example of Abraham, and this one's not on your charts, but or your outlines, but Genesis chapter 22 and verse number 5. Abraham is commanded to go and offer Isaac. It was a 3 days journey to a place that God was showing him where to offer him. He takes several servants with him. And when he arrives near the location where the sacrifice is to be made, and here God has said, "I want you to sacrifice your son." Abraham says to his servants, "Stay here. We will go and worship God and return to you." Worship is something that you enter into. We're told to exhort one another, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some. Worship is something that you enter into. Acts chapter 20 and verse number 7 says, on the first day of the week, the disciples came together to break bread. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 17 through 26, where Paul is dealing with the Lord's Supper, he describes how you come together. And he says, now what you're doing is not the Lord's Supper, but it ought to be. They were commanded to assemble together to take the Lord's Supper, but what they were doing was wrong. And he set them straight. You enter in to worship. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. On the first day of the week, let each of you lay by in store as he has prospered. You enter in to worship. Over and over we find in Scriptures that worship is something that you deliberately enter into. Has a beginning and an end. And we need to prepare our minds for that beginning and that end. And when we're worshiping God, we're with downcast eyes submitting ourselves to Him. We are serving Him in the prescribed manner that He tells us to worship Him. And we do it with a proper heart. We do it in spirit and in truth. Which we're going to talk about next week because I don't want to rush through that. John chapter 4, verses 23 and 24. Four elements of worship. You've got an object to be worshipped. You've got the worshiper, the one who does the worshiping, Acts or John 4:23. You have worshiping God in spirit with a proper attitude, and you have worshiping God in truth, the way He says to do it. Worship is so important. And it is my hope that in this lesson this morning we have reminded ourselves of what worship is and the importance of worshiping God. The lesson is yours.